You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your right. Hello, Suncoast. This is Jack Wallace, and welcome to The Ruthless Truth. I'm going to be your host today, filling in for Ruth, who is going to be out this week. And I wanted to introduce our guest for this week. Is going to be Ali Abdelkader, an organizer here locally in the Tampa Bay area. How's it going, Ali?
It's going very good. I am very glad to be back on the show to talk about all the political developments that are happening, because we have been living through a very, very eventful few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. We seriously have. I've seen so much stuff online about being sort of frustrated about having to live through so many monumentous events. But yes, there's been lots of things happening, Ali. And so I'm excited to get into it now. Today, like we talked about last week, we're going to be going into a little bit about Project 2025, sort of what it is, what it means, and sort of our sort of political analysis of it, right? And what we should be doing about it. Then we're also going to talk about, of course, the news about Biden dropping out, sort of the big shakeup in the presidential election, right? So Biden dropping out, and of course, also Kamala being the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. And we're also going to be asking ourselves this question maybe a lot throughout this episode. And we're going to be asking, will anything actually be fundamentally changing? So we're going to be sort of talking about the different ways things could be changing in America based on sort of what we're seeing in the political environment. But yes, we're going to get straight into it with Project 2025 and sort of going into sort of the broad strokes of it, right? What actually is it, Ali? Could you just give us like a short breakdown?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of people have made a lot of hay about Project 2025, about how scary it would be. And, you know, this is what it would look like if Trump is elected. So I think it's really worth it for us to take a good look at it and see what is actually in there and what it would mean. So basically, Project 2025 is a plan for the next president to enact that was created by the Heritage Foundation. Now, the Heritage Foundation is a right-wing think tank, been around for many, many years, very influential, and they push far-right policy. You know, think tanks, they are funded by billionaires who are trying to advance a certain agenda, and they are trying to advance a far-right agenda. And Project 2025 is basically everything that they want to have happen, which is they want to roll back as many civil economic rights that workers and people have won in this country over the many, many decades, especially, you know, during the Great Depression, where we won Social Security, we won unemployment benefits. Going forward, things like the EPA, they want to do as much as they can to weaken these agencies. Basically, the proposal is that they want to take the entire federal bureaucracy and put it under, you know, direct presidential control and eliminate thousands of jobs. And the idea here from the Heritage Foundation is that Trump is going to be elected and he's going to do what this document says. And Trump actually has had to distance himself from Project 2025 because it's very unpopular electorally. These are not popular policies. This is not, these are not policies that anyone can win an election by running on and saying, I am going to go cut Social Security. Yeah, people are not actually going to vote for that. You know, there are very few people who will vote for that, very rich people. The people who are backing the Heritage Foundation. But no, Trump is out there. He's saying, I don't know what Project 2025 is. I have nothing to do with it. I have no idea who's behind it. I disagree with some of the things they are saying. But the truth of the matter is that the team that created the project is chock full of former Trump advisors, including Director Paul Danz, who was chief of staff at the Office of Personnel Management while Trump was in office. And very likely Trump will be pushed to enact many of these things. We know that when Trump was president last time, he took significant steps towards weakening federal agencies, putting people in place like Betsy DeVos in the Department of Education, who is someone who, you know, is fundamentally opposed to the idea of of public schooling as a strong institution. You know, these are people who want to see the privatization of the schooling system. They want to see the dismantling and rolling back of regulations on corporations. And th there's no reason to believe that he is not going to actually enact these policies. You know, whether or not he follows the Project 2025 playbook to a T, there is no reason to doubt that he's going to follow these policies, because a lot of these policies, fundamentally, when you look at it, are things that the Republicans have been trying to accomplish for many, many years.
Yes,
They have
exactly.
been trying to privatize school systems. They have been trying to roll back Social Security and to cut regulations. That's their entire MO, and they're going to do whatever they think they possibly can do.
Thank you, Ali. And so Project 2025, right? There's this, it's become this big boogeyman in this election. And so I figured we'd talk a little bit about, you've already mentioned some of the things that it would do, right? Sort of like the actual, like what's in it, right? And I figured I'd just sort of rattle off a couple of these here for our listeners, just so we sort of all have like a more firm grasp of what actually is in this, you know, more or less PDF that the Heritage Foundation has sort of created, right? So, like you mentioned, it proposes the entire federal bureaucracy, including independent agencies such as the Department of Justice, should be placed under direct presidential control. This is sort of an idea known as like the unitary executive theory, meaning sort of the president would be allowed to directly implement policies in a number of areas. This is directly sort of going against like the nature of the American political system. Like you mentioned, the proposal also calls for eliminating job protections for thousands of government employees who could then be replaced by political appointees, right? So basically appointing people who would stay and sort of, you know, be ideologically motivated to enact whatever sort of right-wing crazy agenda, right? The document even labels the FBI as a bloated, arrogant, and increasingly lawless organization, right? It calls for drastic overhauls of this and several other federal agencies, as well as the complete elimination of the Department of Education, right? So, like you mentioned with Betsy DeVos, this is sort of the culmination of sort of that sort of strain of right-wing thought of wanting to basically completely privatize the public education system. Sort of moving on to like a different section of 2025. There's increased funding for a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. Of course, this is going to be in there, right? This is one of Trump's signature proposals in 2016. It also proposes dismantling Department of Homeland Security, not in the way that it should, because the Department of Homeland Security basically serves as a way for the state to criminalize immigrants and sort of beat down on people in a way that's fairly disgusting. But they actually propose dismantling the Department of Homeland Security and actually combining it with other immigration enforcement units and other agencies, creating a much larger and more powerful border policing operation, right? This is anti-worker, this is anti-immigrant, this is not good for people here in the States. It also calls for sort of the for school choice, quote unquote, and parental controls over schools. These are sort of the right-wing boogeymen that are sort of taking over sort of the, you know, the quote unquote culture war, right? Taking aim at what it calls sort of the woke propaganda, right? This is another thing that the right has been hitting on very, very recently. It used to be, you know, it used to be we're taking, you know, going to war against PC culture. Now it's sort of woke propaganda, right? This is basically just a way for the right to attack these public institutions, and right now it is the public institution of public education, and in a way to sort of attack its legitimacy and sort of replace it, like we've seen here in Florida with lots more charter and private schools. Project 2025 also proposes to eliminate a long list of all laws and federal regulations, including sexual orientation, gender identity, abortion, and reproductive rights. And also aims to end diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in schools and government departments, and what it calls sort of that wider crackdown, like I mentioned before, on quote unquote woke ideology. It's also anti-climate, because of course it is. It proposes slashing federal money for research and investment in renewable energy, and calls for the next president to quote stop the war on oil and natural gas. These people are jokers. The Heritage Foundation is also creating a database of conservative loyalists to fill government positions and a program to sort of train those new workers, right? This is sort of a broad overview of sort of the different things that are going on with Project 2025 and sort of like what's actually in it, right? But I sort of wanted to talk about maybe, you know, what we think sort of the wider sort of political analysis of this is, right? Of Project 2025 and sort of like what we can be doing like as workers and people here in the United States to like try to stop it.
Right. Yeah. And I'm really glad that you listed all of those things out because it is important that we understand what it is that we are fighting against. And I think it's also important to understand that Project 2025, a lot of the policies are already underway. You know, like they have already won some major victories through the Supreme Court that we have seen during Biden's presidency. We have seen the rolling back of federal protections on abortion rights through the Dobbs decision. We have seen just in the past few weeks many, many Supreme Court decisions, like the Chevron decision, that really weaken federal agencies' ability to regulate corporations and to protect the environment. We have not seen the Democrats, Biden, even when Biden had a majority in the House, a majority in the Senate, which is the point that we bring up many, many times on the show. When he had that majority, he did not lift a finger to actually try and codify federal abortion protection rights. He did not do that. That was something that could have been done. That was something that was extremely popular. That was something that, you know, anyone who voted against it basically would have had a very tough time getting reelected if they actually called it to a vote. But they didn't call it to a vote. Instead, what Biden did is he said, you know, if you want to protect abortion, you got to vote for me again. You got to vote for the Democrats in the House elections and the you know, Senate elections. That's what needs to be done. They fundamentally, and this is the point that I'm trying to make here, the Democrats are fundamentally unable and unwilling to fight back against this right-wing agenda. They have no positive alternative to present to people. They do not even recognize the crisis that this country is in, the crisis that workers in this country are feeling. They are not taking enough action to stop climate change. They are not taking enough action to help workers who are suffering from, you know, rising rent costs that are getting more and more difficult to pay. They have not done enough to fight against the inflation and pricing problems for the American people. They have not done enough, like I said, to protect civil rights like the right to an abortion. And they do not have an actual positive alternative. So when people who are whose lives are getting worse every single year, they look at the Democrats and they say, you know, nothing is getting better. And the Republicans say, well, you know, whose fault this actually is? It's the fault of trans people. It's the fault of immigrants. You know, it's the immigrants who are taking black jobs, as Trump said. This is the kind of rhetoric that they are going to try and use. They're going to offer up these false solutions to people's actual problems. And to these people, a false solution is better than no solution. And that's what we have with the Democrats right now. That's what Biden represents. When Biden was running in 2020, he said that under him, quote, nothing will fundamentally change. That's what he said. They are not interested in fundamental change. They are not interested in fighting back against this agenda. In fact, in 2020, and during the primary in 2016, Democrats and Democratic donors actually donated to and supported far-right candidates in the Republican Party, like the MAGA people, because they thought that if they promoted that strain of the Republican Party, that it would be an easier strain to fight against, basically, you know. And what's the logic there? If you are looking from the outside, what the logic seems to me to be is that the more insane, the more fascistic, the more unappealing the Republicans are to people who value civil rights, to people who value human rights, to people who value social justice, the more that we can say, look, you have to vote for us or this is going to happen, while not fundamentally changing anything in the system. I mean, if we want to fight back against this, there is not going to be a path to doing that inside the Democratic Party. If we want to fight back against the rule of corporations in this country, and if we want to actually challenge climate change, there is no path that I can see to doing that in the Democratic Party. I'm sorry. The path that we have to take is we need to build organizations, workers' power outside of the Democratic and Republican Party. We need to see unions stronger than ever. And this is something that I think is going in a really good direction. Just recently, it was announced that seven unions came out and they signed a letter that they support the ending of all U.S. aid to Israel. This is massive news.
Huge,
You
yeah.
know, if we want that to have more power, if we want to have workers have more power, we need to be spending time organizing our communities, meeting people where they're at, and not entrusting our political hopes and futures with a Democratic Party because it's a dead end.
Yeah, and I'm glad you sort of were touching on a lot there about the Democratic Party, because that's become sort of like their calling card, right? It's like, oh, you know, like we you have to vote for us. They do this every single election cycle. You have to vote for us. You have to vote for us, or else the fascists are going to come into power, right? Meaning the Republican Party and Donald Trump, whoever, right? It doesn't matter really who the Republican nominee is. They're probably going to say it anyways. And it's really funny to me, because not only sort of does the Democratic Party not offer like any sort of like solutions for the working class to the issues they actually face, right? You mentioned rising rents, rising food prices, the inability to buy a home, right? The Democratic Party, instead of sort of offering any sort of like positive program, like you mentioned, right, to sort of like try to counteract and sort of like act as a real bulwark against what they call sort of like a fascist creep in American politics. The instinct of the Democratic Party actually has been to move further and further to the right. You know, we've been seeing this for decades on decades, right? Take the issue of immigrant rights, for instance, right, with Biden. Rather than sort of like making like a clear case on why immigrants are not responsible for any of the problems that we're seeing for Americans, right? Or explaining that asylum seekers are, you know, like largely fleeing the effects of US foreign policy, Biden basically changed, or sort of maybe not changed, but sort of embraced this tough on the border sort of attitude, right? He's effectively adopted the core policies of the Trump administration when it comes to denying entry to asylum seekers and unleashing stepped up violence from the Border Patrol. You know, there was lots of sort of, you know, outcry, and it was very, very warranted against the kids in cages and things like that that we saw during the Trump administration, right? And for good reason, right? Because that was the disgusting thing to see. But when the Democrats do it, then lots of the mainstream media are silent, and then we're not talking about you know, kids in cages anymore, even though the Democrats are basically embracing and actually, you know, in the case with the Border Patrol, actually stepping up their support of sort of such a disgusting institution like the Border Patrol. The Democratic strategists are sort of thinking like, oh, you know, this might provide us like a short-term electoral boost. I don't really know if that's really actually true, but in the broader sense, it sort of makes Trump look like he was the guy who was right all along. Fuels this growth of sort of this anti-immigrant sentiment, right?
That's right.
And this sort of is, I want to point out another thing that's sort of been ridiculous about the Democratic Party, is that, you know, there's been a lot that's happened in American politics in the last like 2 weeks, right? The attempted assassination on Trump, Biden dropping out. All these sorts of like massive sort of like switches, right? And sort of like things that have happened. You know, if the Democrats and Biden actually believe that the Republican Party and Trump are sort of like the coming fascist tide in American politics, why did, after when there was assassination of Trump on, or excuse me, there was an assassination attempt on Trump's life, did they take down their ads, sort of attacking Trump and the Republican Party? Why did they stop, you know, sort of their criticism of his program and the program of the Republican Party, right? It just seems to me that it's like, oh, okay, no, actually, we don't actually believe that Trump and the Republican Party are right-wing fascists. We basically are just utilizing this sort of very emotionally, I would say, manipulative sort of rhetoric in order to try to trick people into voting for them, into voting for a party that doesn't actually stand for the people, and for a sort of progressive, sort of like forward-thinking sort of strategy to, like, you know, basically deal with the problems that we have here in the 21st century. You know, like understanding Project 2025 is important, right? Because it puts us in a better position to expose the plans of the right wing and the true political character of the Trump campaign. But it also allows us to prepare for what may come and formulate alternative proposals that can be a real basis of struggle, right? And the utter failure of liberals in the capitalist class, it's up to, you know, forward-thinking progressive people, right, to lead the fight to push back and defeat the far right, not the Democratic Party, because we know that it's not coming from them. But I want to transition us into our sort of the second big topic of today, because there's been so many big topics that have happened, right, in the past 2 weeks, maybe just even a week or so. And that was, of course, Biden stepping down, right? This was big news in the media, right? Biden had been looking very shaky for a long time now. The polls were saying that Biden was gonna basically beat him to a pulp and win. Hope, I mean, even possibly a landslide election, right? You never know exactly know sort of the with polls and things like that, but it was not looking good for the Biden campaign. And then they had the disastrous debate that the Biden campaign actually, campaigned for, and it was actually the ones whose idea it was to have that have that debate. And we saw in that debate that Biden looked horrible, right? He looked like he didn't know where he was, and trailing off, not finishing sentences, not able to really make coherent sense. And that was sort of the end of the road, I think, for the Biden campaign that already, I think, had sort of already been on its course, right? The genocide in Gaza has made him incredibly unpopular with Democratic voters and just with people across the political spectrum. Most people in this country believe that there should be a ceasefire now between or sort of in Palestine, right? That there needs to be a stop to this relentless killing. And not even the Democrats, not even Biden, can even jump on sort of such a popular proposal such as that to save themselves, because the Democratic Party is so, and the Republican Party is both so wrapped up in sort of the protection and the preservation of these Israeli genocidal settler state. But sort of get back to Biden, right? He sort of had that horrible Rocky debate performance in which Trump, frankly, came out looking better than him. Of course, I'm not endorsing anything that Trump said. He obviously is a right-wing megalomaniacal maniac. But in terms of how people saw him, sort of in contrast to Biden, Biden didn't look good. And then we had sort of the assassination attempt on Trump. And that, of course, he came out of that with a roaring sort of political support in terms of that he was able to sort of, like, in contrast to President Biden, look strong, like physically, right? Able to sort of like survive an assassination attempt, quote unquote, right? And then this all sort of led to his resignation, right? The sort of the acknowledgement finally of the Democratic Party to say, hey, this guy is actually like might lose historically in November if we keep on with him, and we actually do need a change. Whether that change actually is going to mean anything for the working people of the United States, I don't believe that's the case. But maybe Ali, you could tell us a little bit about sort of who they've decided to sort of tap. And Biden, of course, nominated or sort of threw his support behind his vice president, Kamala Harris. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about sort of like who she is and sort of maybe how she sort of like her record, right?
Right. And the question that we should be asking ourselves is, with Kamala in and Biden out, is anything going to fundamentally change? Regardless, Biden, very, very unpopular. So the Democratic Party is trying to make up for a lot of lost work and market Kamala as hip, young. She's a girl boss. She's going out on the campaign videos, and they got her, edited with Charli XCX and Chappell Roan. She's a girl boss, and we got to understand what we're facing here. I think that it is safe to say that Kamala Harris is not going to fundamentally change anything here. We have to understand who Kamala Harris is. Kamala Harris was a career prosecutor, and she was the Attorney General of California. When she was the Attorney General of California, she supported hardline mass incarceration policies. She supported the racist war on drugs. She was locking parents up over truancy. She was keeping people in jail to meet quotas, to use prison labor. I mean, these are some of the things from her record before she's president. Okay. All right. Forgive me. These are some of the things from her record before she became vice president. Well, what has she been up to in the Biden administration? Well, Harris was the one who's been leading the Biden administration's anti-immigration crackdown at the U.S.-Mexico border. You talked about how Biden's immigration policy is essentially the same as Trump's immigration policy in 2016. He did not tear down Trump's border wall. He's expanding it. They've been unleashing brutal violence on asylum seekers. And Kamala Harris has been one of the faces of this program. She told people from Haiti, from South America, from Africa, and from other parts of the world where asylum seekers are coming from, parts of the world that have been devastated by U.S. interventionism, she told them, do not come. That's who she is when it comes to immigration. And let's talk about the genocide in Gaza. I'm glad you said most people support a ceasefire. Meanwhile, we have Netanyahu coming to the Capitol and speaking before both houses of Congress. Absolutely ridiculous. But we know the Biden administration has been completely complicit in this genocide. Not a single bomb could be dropped without the Biden administration sending them over. The Biden administration is just as responsible for this as Netanyahu and the Israelis. And Harris served as the number two official during this administration. She has not come out and said, you know, we need to stop sending weapons to Israel. We need to stop this genocide. She did come out. You know, I think the Democrats were, you know, testing ceasefire language. And she came out to say, we need a ceasefire, and then had a little pause and let the applause go in. And then after the applause, after they had their clip, she said, for 2 weeks to allow humanitarian aid to come in. I mean, how ridiculous. How ridiculous. That is not a human, that is not a ceasefire. That is a little pause in the genocide so we can ship more bombs over to Israel and they can coordinate. Okay, we're going to drop them over here and over here and over here, and we're going to regroup. I mean, this is ridiculous. She is not going to save us. Just like he laid out, the Democratic Party is fundamentally incapable of defeating the far right. I think a Harris administration is going to look extremely similar to our current Biden administration. You know, she's a little younger. She looks, you know, like she can actually talk at most times of the day. So credit to her on that. She does have that going over Biden. Will she win? Will she be able to beat Trump? I don't know. It's impossible to say. I don't have a crystal ball, and we're many months before the election. A lot of things can happen. But is it safe to say that if Kamala Harris wins, we as the American people, as the working class, do not have someone in the White House that represents us and is willing to fight for what we need? I think it is very safe to say that.
Like you were saying, thanks, Ali. It's been really frustrating for me because I've seen lots of people online sort of, like getting behind her, right? And I don't necessarily blame people for this because the media is sort of like pushing her as sort of like, oh, she's this like young, hip, sort of like cool person, right? Who's like the girl boss, like you said, who's gonna sort of come and be like a foil for like Biden and Trump, sort of like old whiteness, right? But like you said, she's a career Democratic politician, right? She was, when she got her law degree, what did she do? She didn't become like a public defender and try to sort of like fight for the little person, right? Fight for the person who's sort of like up against all of it. No, like what did she do? She became a prosecutor. She went to work for the government to sort of put people away and sort of like try to put them in jail for as long as possible, right? And you sort of mentioned that was sort of like her history on like mass incarceration and the racist war on drugs and locking up parents over truancy in California, right? Like these are not like popular things, but these are sort of like what the Democratic Party has basically, been some of the architects of the worst mass incarceration sort of bills and policies of the United States, some of the worst ones in like the past 30, 40 years, starting with Clinton and Biden back in the 90s. But Kamala, of course, is younger. She is, like you said, able to string together some sentences without sort of looking too crazy. But like she is fundamentally the same as Joe Biden. Like let's be honest about that. She is fundamentally does not have any sort of political difference with Joe Biden or with the Democratic Party at large. And like you said, what did Joe Biden say that nothing will fundamentally change? Well, I think we should believe her and believe them, the Democrats, when they say that. I also wanted just to, as we close out here, I just wanted to uplift sort of the, like you said, there's a demonstration going on in at the Capitol the 24th, where about arresting Netanyahu, right? Netanyahu, like you mentioned, is coming to DC, and the people sort of all across the country are mobilizing and sort of issuing a notice of citizen's arrest for him, right? He is the leader of Israel, a leader of the genocidal state that is basically, destroying Gaza and destroying the people of Gaza. And, he needs to be brought to justice. So I just wanted to uplift that. Be sure to check out sort of all the different sort of the media, the videos, pictures that are coming out of that in the next couple of days, because it's going to be really uplifting. It's going to be really powerful to see sort of a sea of people there in D.C. But that's all we got time for today, Ali. I appreciate you coming on and coming on the Ruthless Truth. And I want to just say that I hope all you in the Sun Coast find the courage to get up, stand up, and not give up the fight.
Get up, stop.